I'm glad to be with my co-host and my partner in crime. I'm in LA on the West Coast. He's in Washington, D.C. on the East Coast. And he is Mr. Mark Levine, former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank in the House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committees. Mark currently hosts the Washington-based radio television talk show The Inside Scoop and the Ruckus Caucus on Pacifica Radio, WPFW 89.3 FM, and also frequently appears on TV, Fox, MSNBC, CNN, Fox Biz, and CNBC. He's tangled with everyone from Bill O'Reilly on the right to his Pacifica co-host and me on the left. And he's guest hosting the show next Tuesday through Friday. Well, I'll be in D.C. Right. and get to see him in person, along with Marky Mark Grimaldi, my executive producer. Mark, good evening. I've missed you over the holidays and so glad to be co-hosting this and next hour tonight together.
I've missed you, too. I'm hoping to invite you to my studios in Washington, D.C. next week. We can talk about that. Wouldn't that be cool? I would host you for a change.
No, when I'm off, I'm off.
That's why I'm doing it. That's why I'm hosting. But all right. We'll see.
Let me see. Meetings with cocktails and cocktails with friends and associates in D.C. versus going to work when somebody's filling in for me. I'll have to weigh it out.
You can come in drunk if you want. That could be quite amusing to listeners to hear a non-sober Leslie Marshall.
Well, buddy, let's talk about, and we have so many things to talk about. We have 2 hours to talk about. How many issues are we talking about tonight? Let me see. There's
7, 8. I lost count.
That's good because we have 8 segments, so this is good. And the first one is something that I don't know much about because I always mention to people, and I readily admit I am a techno moron, and I'm afraid of technology. And except for my great crew, I would not know what Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and all those things are. And they're very helpful, and we're glad to be a part of it and have them a part of us and the show. But yesterday we touched upon this with a guest, George Zornick, a reporter for The Nation, just one of the segments. And there's a great piece, actually, that explains net neutrality. And actually, Marky Mark Grimaldi, our executive producer, explained it to me yesterday. And it's kind of, you know, becoming so that people understand pay to play on the web. This is a court ruling. You're an attorney. This court ruling, in short, so that people understand, will make us pay more for things like Netflix and other things that we enjoy now at very low cost. Is that correct? The FCC being shut down by the court?
Almost certainly, although I think it's going to go up all the way up to the United States Supreme Court. People need to first understand what net neutrality is. Internet neutrality is a government principle set forward by the Obama administration through the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, that basically says that you can't discriminate on the internet based on your customer. In other words, when we go to the internet, it's kind of like when you go on the telephone lines. You don't really care which lines the traffic goes through, you just want your call to work. Well, the same is true on the internet. You don't really care where it comes from. You don't really care which you might care which provider because, you know, they charge you every month. But other than that, you know, which networks, which you use, you just want your internet to work and you want it to work fast. Well, on the telephone lines, we have telephone neutrality. What that means is if I call, I can call anyone in the country. And on today's plans particularly, they don't even make a distinction between local and long distance anymore. And I can get them. And I can get them at the – I hear it just as well whether I call locally, generally today, or whether I call, California. And that's telephone neutrality, and that's what the FCC does as well. The court said that the FCC can't regulate the internet. They said the internet is not like the telephones, things everybody uses and should be used neutrally. It's something different. I think the court's dead wrong. But at the end of the day, what this will, if the court's ruling is upheld by the Supreme Court, what that means is that Verizon can basically say, we're not going to let you go to AT&T's website because they're a competitor, or we're going to let your rich neighbor who pays more than you do, we're going to let them download movies, but you can have movies, you just have to wait all night for it to download. You're going to go back to dial-up speeds while someone else gets it really fast because they're a preferred customer. No longer will the internet traffic lines be like the telephone lines where anyone can use them equally. Instead, we're going to discriminate based on who our customers are, and we might even censor you from going to websites we don't want you to go to. It's a very, very scary development. Luckily, I I hate to make predictions about the Supreme Court on this one because it's a very pro-business Supreme Court. They could uphold it, but they shouldn't, because I think today an internet is as much a utility of communication as the telephone. Indeed, I would argue the internet today is probably more important than the telephone, because I would argue that you can actually get your telephone through the internet, but you can't get your internet through the telephone. Did I explain it all in 5 minutes or less? I tried to.
You did. You did a very good job. Let me ask you, Mark. I have anytime I see FCC, I always think like evil Satan 666, because of what they've done. I know they are good in this one, but what they've done with talk radio over the years, it's not a federal government for free.
Right. I'm not gonna defend them in talk radio.
Right. It's just that segment, but this is going to go to the Supreme Court, and I know, like you said, you've made your predictions, so that people understand this. What this basically is corporations taking advantage of the fact that we have a non-regulated internet in order to, in order to do, in a sense, what Citizens United has done for many conservative organizations in buying their politicians.
I mean, imagine if every time you made a phone call, every time I called you in California, Leslie, that, the government of Virginia and Tennessee and Oklahoma and Arizona and every state in between came in there and said, well, we want our cut, we want our thing, and you have to pay. Or every time I drove, every time I turned a corner, I had to pay a new dollar into the toll road. Internet traffic shouldn't be where every sort of square inch is monetized. It should be something where we have the free flow of information. And what's interesting about the court ruling is it wasn't a constitutional ruling. This isn't something where this can't be done. This is a question of how to interpret the law that governs the Federal Communications Commission. The long and the short of it means that even if the Supreme Court rules against net neutrality, which I fear could happen by a 5-4 decision on this court, if that were to happen, Congress can overrule the Supreme Court, because it's not a constitutional question, and simply give the FCC the authority it needs to say, don't discriminate on the internet. And so even if the Supreme Court rules against us being users who want free access to the internet, Congress can stand by us. And I don't, this is going to be a hard one for Republicans to defend. We support big businesses taking advantage of people on the internet. Kind of hard to defend, but I wouldn't put it past them.
Yeah, well, most definitely. So that people understand, some people might say, well, look, I pay between, $5 and $10 a month for Netflix. How bad could this be? And what other things that are negative that directly affect we, the consumer, would we experience in addition to just, prices going up?
Well, let's say you stream the Leslie Marshall Show on the internet. You might find that unless you pay a special streaming price for downloading audio, although admittedly downloading video is much more internet intensive than audio, so it'll hurt your Netflix more than it'll hurt your Leslie Marshall download. But either way, the point is you're using a lot of broadband. You're using a lot of basically the stuff the internet gives you. It will slow down everything. It'll make everything go backward unless you pay a special price to your provider who can then cash in on that. And the other thing that really scares me, frankly, is content discrimination, because I could see how if you use Comcast, and I'm not picking on Comcast, Verizon, AT&T, any of them, wherever you get your internet, although Verizon brought the case, it could be wherever you got the internet, will actually start preventing you from seeing their competition. It's almost like restricting who you can make phone calls to. You can't make phone calls to the rival phone company and switch your plan. We're just going to cut off that service because we don't have to. It's our phone. That, in essence, is what could be done if this court holding is upheld.
Why do you? Is this an example where private corporations and their money have so much power right now
that
they win even over the federal government? Not once, but twice in this case.
I look at the internet much like I look at regulated utilities. Okay, there was a time in America 100 years ago when water, electricity, and yes, the phone companies were all private, were all unregulated, and they could turn your water off, or charge you an enormous, I mean, if you were living in West Virginia right now, they charge you an enormous rate for clean water. I don't even know if it was possible in West Virginia, but you get my point. Before these utilities were regulated, basically businesses had monopolies. They're natural monopolies. You could only get electricity to your house from that one wire attached to your house. Whoever owns the wire controls you. Well, the government decided, really, 100 years ago or so, that water, electricity, and yes, even phone bills are basic things that you have to have a right to get regulated, because otherwise there'd be a natural monopoly. To me, the internet is a lot more like telephones, water, electricity than it is like a new car, because different companies can provide you a new car, that's fine, but the internet, there's only one wire to your home, and the internet should be able to take you wherever you want to go, just like a phone call can.
Another thing that, I don't fully, understand, but would this also, the only way to ask it is, does this limit our choice as consumers? Because if somebody is just, when we go to Google and, pull something up, when we use a search engine, somebody could dominate to the point where like pages are just one company because the FCC is not able to reach or overreach, as corporations are stating.
You wonder what you won't know. That's the heart of it. I don't think Verizon's going to advertise, we won't let you go to AT&T. And so what if they won't let you go to AT&T in the future? How will you find out? Well, you won't find out on the internet. maybe you'll find out through your local newspaper if you still read newsprint or turn on, CNN. This is all about stopping the flow of information. It's all about requiring massive payments. And listen, the big corporations will get the fastest download speeds. I like the fact that I can download something just as fast as the Koch brothers billionaires. It doesn't seem to me fair. And already you can regulate download speeds somewhat. But what you can't do is say you use the internet more than this other person, and therefore we're gonna charge you a fortune. And yeah, downloading movies, that's probably one of the most intensive ways to use the internet. So it'll really hurt Netflix and Amazon Prime and Hulu and the other places that have good movies on the internet.
Do you think that, are you surprised at the lack of outrage by people out there? Or do you think, A, a lot of people don't know about it, or B, people don't understand how it will directly affect them?
A and B. People do not understand it. They don't know how it will affect them. And the companies are all saying, we're not going to do these awful things that we just spent millions of dollars to legislate to do. We're not going to do these awful things that we're insisting we have a right to do. Don't worry, consumer. We won't do these horrible things that we just, spent a fortune on lawyers to insist that we have a right to do. I don't buy it. If they're not going to do them, why are they fighting so hard to do them? It seems pretty easy to me. But unless you're a tech geek or a political geek, and I'm more a political geek than a tech geek, it's hard to follow these things.
Well, we're going to take a break. As you know the drill, you know the music, you know the beds, because he sits in for me, and he will be next Tuesday through Friday here on The Leslie Marshall Show. Mark Levine is my co-host and partner in crime. By the way, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, you can join us. We've got a lot to talk about, and we're going to be switching gears to another topic when we come back. Keep in mind, if you want to join us, 888-653-7543 is the number. Follow me on Twitter at Leslie Marshall, or follow Mark on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk, and you can tweet us during the show. And check out my website, LeslieMarshallShow.com, and his, MarkLevineTalk.com, during the break. Also, we'll be back to you, Mark Levine and I, co-hosting on this Thursday for 2 hours, hours 2 and 3, here on the program. Don't go away. He is such a cutie. I would love this man to sing to me. Anyway, privately. Anyway, Leslie Marshall here with Mark Levine. Mark, do you agree with me? Bruno Mars do anything for you? Oh, that wasn't Bruno Mars. Who sings that song?
Justin Timberlake.
Oh, no. Justin Timberlake does not do it for me. And I know he does it for a lot of people. You into him?
You know who I like right now, and I don't mean physically, I just like his music. I like Macklemore a lot. That's what I'm listening to a lot.
Oh, actually, I like that music. And no, I was talking physically. Bruno Mars is such a cute little... I thought it was Bruno Mars, and I actually like that song, but I am not a Justin Timberlake fan as far as how he looks.
Yeah, none of them really do it for me.
Yeah, none of them do it for me either. Anyway, let's get back to what we're talking about. We're talking about Chris Christie, who was not doing Justin Timberlake or Bruno Mars. He's got a bridge scandal. Let's talk about this, okay? And we're not talking about right now necessarily. Does this hurt his career? Blah blah blah. Because I think by 2016, it'll be a blip on the radar screen. It'll be forgotten.
I don't think it'll be forgotten.
Why?
I think that's
wishful thinking on your part, I think.
No, I don't think so, because I think it goes into a pre-existing narrative, which is that he's a bully, that he runs New Jersey like a New Jerseyan. He runs it like, half their governors or something have been indicted. I don't remember. I lose track. But the point is that this is a state of political payback. This isn't the first political payback he's done. I forget who the candidate was. I think it was a former governor who spoke against him. No, it was Governor Kane, of New Jersey, said something anti-Christie, and Christie took away his security detail. He said, we're not going to have cops defend you, which is very weird and very much political payback, and no one noticed that scandal until this one comes. This is a guy who plays dirty, and I don't think people saw this side of Christie until the bridge scandal, and I don't think he's going to shake it off that easily. I really don't, Leslie.
Well, I don't think, but honestly, if you have like Benghazi, which Republicans are using against Hillary, which I think that's the only thing they'll have, versus this, I don't think this is as severe. I do think that if the funds were shown for the Hurricane Sandy funds were used for actual tourism and marketing, that I think, obviously is an impeachable offense for him as governor.
Well, apparently
that is a bigger deal.
But actually, I think that did happen. I mean, again, it remains to be seen, but that accusation seems to have legs. I think the Bridgegate, let me tell you why. I think people, Benghazi is a foreign country, far away, terrorists exist, right? How to spend money properly or not properly, complicated. But being stuck in traffic on a New York bridge, I mean, all of us know.
Okay. But I'm not going to elect or not elect somebody based on that. Hang on, my co-host and partner in crime, Mark Levine, and I will be back to you right after this. We'll talk a little bit more about this and go into something else. Don't go away. Hey there, America. How you doing? Happy Thursday. Mark Levine is my co-host. He's on the East Coast in D.C. I'm on the West Coast in L.A. Talking a little bit about Chris Christie, talking about a traffic scandal, a bridge, the GW Bridge, and talking about whether it's going to be a problem for him. Mark is with me. Hey, Mark, let's go to Daily Dave on Line 5 in Hawaii. Hello,
sure.
Daily Dave. Aloha. I know you want to talk some Christie, so let's do it.
Aloha, Leslie. Hi, Mark. How's it going?
Aloha, Dave.
Good, good. You know what I haven't heard anybody bring up is the day. I mean, I tweeted this the other day, and I'm sure you noticed, but
I notice everything you do.
Well, then there's no point in me.
Was that the right answer? Was that the right answer?
Yeah, that was perfect. That nobody has pointed out the fact that the bridge shutdown was during the 9/11, September 11th. I think it went from the 10th to the 14th or something like that. Several days.
Yep.
And just, you know, I mean, this is horrible to think of, but if there had been, a copycat or, some kind of anniversary event where emergency vehicles or let's say an attack on the bridge itself, I can't imagine, the complete, rigmarole that would have ensued, and I just cannot imagine that Christie's top people, I mean, these are the people that have been with him, probably since the beginning, and know him inside and out, that meet with him every day, that there was somehow that he was not, in the loop. I mean, why would they just go off on a wild hair and do that?
Here's the thing. I think that Senator Lindsey Graham, who I don't agree with often, he's Republican from South Carolina, I'm sure you know.
No, I don't, and I agreed with him a couple of weeks ago when I was concerned.
Right. Well, I don't agree with him often, but he made a very good point. He said, if one of my staff were to suggest to another person on my staff, let's do something that harms the people of South Carolina as political payback to one of my enemies, he said that person would get a blank stare from the other person on my staff and say, Lindsey Graham wouldn't stand for that. What are you crazy? Here's the thing. One person could do something crazy. Two people, maybe. Three, unlikely. Seven, 20, and all of them are sure, not just that they want to do this, but that Christie will love this. Why were all of his employees, including his top campaign person, his deputy chief of staff, all his appointees to Port Authority, why were they so sure that Governor Christie wanted this to happen? Even if he didn't know about it, okay, they knew enough about him to know that this is a guy who likes political payback, even if it's downright mean. And they all thought he would like it and were surprised to find out he wouldn't. That's the question. Whether or not Christie knew about it or not kind of reminds me of, I think it was King John and Shakespeare, where he says, well, no one rid me of this meddlesome priest. And then they stab Sir Thomas A. Becket in the church. You know, he didn't say kill the guy. He just said, well, no one rid me of this meddlesome priest. You know, I can just hear Chris Christie. Well, no one rid me of this meddlesome mayor. And then, oh, I didn't think they were going to close off the bridges. But why did they think that he would like this? And Lindsey Graham makes it clear that if anyone on his staff did it, they'd say, Graham would hate this. What are you talking about? Why didn't anyone say that on Christie's staff? And I think it's a question people are going to keep asking.
Dave, I want your take on that, and that'll give mine.
I didn't think of that angle. I mean, I understand that they're trying to trying to garner favor. With the
right, they're trying to please him.
Right,
why did they think this would
please
him?
Right, this seems like a great idea, but a more direct, you know, for political retribution, the more direct thing would have been the mayor or mayors now who requested, you know, emergency funds from FEMA for Hurricane Sandy and were denied millions and millions and millions of dollars for their communities because they didn't endorse his reelection. And that's a much more direct way of doing it. And perhaps that might be the larger scandal.
Here's the thing. Okay, I love you guys. I'm a Democrat. I don't want Christie to win. There are some things I like about him, to be honest. I like the shoot from the hip kind of jersey
guy,
personally.
There's a lot of him to like.
Yeah, that's true. But
he's such a likable guy.
I like the fact that he was like, you know, he spoke out and gave kudos to the president, that he breaks in from his party lines. He's not, you know, I like he's not bending over for the Koch brothers, okay? And quite frankly, I just don't think this is going to be as big a deal. One, two, I don't think he necessarily knew anything about it. And I have to say, and I wrote about this, that I really felt the way he handled it was excellent regarding leadership. You know, he addressed it. He's like, I'm embarrassed. I'm humiliated. He talked to somebody. He fired somebody. Hey, I didn't know about this. I mean, this is awful. And even though I don't think it's wrong knowing, and you know, Mark, a lot of people in D.C., but sometimes people love their, I mean, think about it. How many people would take a bullet for Hillary or Bill Clinton? There's a number of them, okay?
Yeah, but and they're supposed to take a bullet.
Right. I'm not talking about Secret Service. Now, I am talking about, and I don't mean literally, I'm just saying that I think there are people that just love their candidate, love their boss so much that they get so angry at anybody who's not on their team, and they get vindictive. And I think that's what happened. But you're saying, Mark, that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree with regard to staffing, and that vindication comes from Christie.
I got the Lindsey Graham quote. I found it while you were talking on the internet. And this is the quote. If anybody in my office...
You were surfing the internet while I was talking?
Yeah.
God, I can't believe Mark and Joe, our executive... producer and assistant producer would not have gut all over your ass about that as they do mine. But anyway, go ahead.
It's part of my vendor net neutrality. I can search and talk to you at the same time.
I see.
Here's what Lindsey Graham said, quote, if anybody in my office had done such a thing, they knew what their fate would be because I'm not that kind of a guy. I just don't see how people that close to him could have felt comfortable enough to do this if they thought their boss wasn't of this mindset. Isn't that just common sense? Unquote. Pretty strong stuff.
Right. What Lindsey Graham, if I hear you correctly, what Lindsey Graham is implying is that there may have been an aspect to Christie's personality that these people knew.
Exactly.
It's kind
exactly.
of right.
He's a bully.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Richard Nixon said, I am not.
I still don't think, wait a minute. He's a bully, okay? Yeah, perhaps. I don't think that's going to stop. Look, you know, we didn't think that Republicans would vote for Romney because he's Mormon, especially, you know, and we were wrong. And they're not going to not vote for Christie because he's moderate if he has the nomination. They're going to vote for him because he's a Republican. He's not a Democrat and he's not Hillary.
But he's not going to win the nomination, though.
Well, I don't think he'll win the nomination.
I hope not, because I hope somebody like a Ted Cruz wins the nomination because he's easier to beat.
He won't win either. My prediction right now is Marco Rubio. I may change my opinion.
Oh, that is so good. Marco Rubio will totally lose to Hillary, hands down.
What about Walker from Wisconsin?
He might win Florida. I don't know.
You can win without winning Florida.
Walker and Wisconsin?
Walker in Wisconsin appeals to business, but doesn't appeal to unions. And a lot of union people are Republicans. They're not just Democrats who are in the unions.
But the Tea
Walker
Party
is my prediction, and I'm sticking to it until I change my mind.
I don't think Marco Rubio has the experience, and he has veered away from the Republican Party too many times. I mean, what is he? Is he old school GOP, moderate GOP, Tea Party
he tries
GOP?
To be both.
He straddles. No, fence straddlers never win. I don't think he'll get the nomination.
What about
who are you predicting?
I think somebody might add him as a VP because they, you know, want to court the Hispanic vote, not understanding the difference in this country between a Cubano and Mexicans and how they hate each other, and the Cuban community being very Republican in voting historically, and a very small percentage of the Hispanic population, Latino population in this country.
So, Leslie, I'll push Ryan, Dave, and then I'll push guys. Dave as well. I want to get your predictions for nominee. Go for it, Leslie.
I think it's Chris Christie.
You think it's Chris Christie?
I do. Because honestly, that's who I would put forth, because you can get Democratic vote people to vote for him who don't like Hillary if she's the person, or a woman. You can get people that like that kind of guy, like that I can have a beer with. Hello, let's remember John Kerry versus George Bush. Also, because Chris Christie can appeal to moderates and can appeal to centrists. He's not so crazy to the right on social issues. And I think many Democrats have become more fiscally conservative over the years. So I think he bridges the gap, and it's that gap that determines the election.
Which is why he'll never be nominated by the right-wing Republicans who control the party right now.
But neither will Tea Party. Neither will anybody.
Think Rubio can appeal to them. Dave, what's your prediction?
Well, I think Ryan, I mean, to go back a moment ago, what Leslie was saying about experience, I mean, Ryan's the head of the Budget Committee in the Congress. So obviously that's, you know,
Paul Ryan could do it. He could do it. I grant you. I think Ryan is someone.
Paul Ryan is not only or appears to be too young. He's got no, watching him is like watching paint dry. He has no charisma. And then on top of it, all you have to do is play a few clips from the Biden-Ryan debate, and it just is going to remind people how inexperienced, and he's just not strong enough.
I don't think another prediction, if I can throw this out there, is I don't think Hillary's going to be the nominee. I mean, she's just been savage.
If she wants it, it's hers. I think.
I don't think so, but I love this.
Mark.
This woman.
I agree she's the front runner, but, you know, look, she was the front runner in 2008, too. You want to know who my favorite woman to run is? I'm sorry, Hillary. It's Elizabeth Warren. That's my favorite of the women. But I don't think Elizabeth Warren's going to run. But I'm just saying, if I had a choice between Elizabeth Warren and Hillary, I'd choose Elizabeth Warren, because I think she's actually.
Yeah, but it would bother me if Elizabeth Warren did that as a woman, to be honest, seriously, because Elizabeth Warren is great, but I think Hillary's paid her dues more than Elizabeth Warren. And quite frankly, here's the thing about Hillary, even though we don't like to admit it, let's just be honest and put it out there. One, you are getting two for the price of one. We've never
I
had
do
a,
love Bill.
Wait. Okay. Bill. All right. We have never had a first man. And
true.
Because of that, with a first lady, people flipped out with Hillary doing this, doing that, not wanting to bake cupcake. But because we've never had a first man, what is his role? That would be defined for the first time by this individual. Who better to define? Two, The world loves them. Everybody loves them. The Israelis love them. The Palestinians love them. The Pakistanis love them. The Indians love them. The Germans love them. Everybody.
Hang on. Slow down just for a second. I understand that Hillary's, you know, she's powerful and so forth. But a lot of us are still upset about her vote on the Iraq war. This thing that's come up recently from the Congress about the Benghazi attacks, I mean, does not look good, even though it seems apparently, I hope in the next hour we'll move on to how this report about Benghazi completely flies right in the face of this New York Times article that seemed to get everybody off the hook. I mean, if you recall what I'm saying, and that this woman from Texas that stood up for 16 hours or something like that to support Planned Parenthood. I mean, I'd like to see her run.
Yes, she will.
I wish I could remember her name right now, but
Wendy.
I mean, I think she's awesome. If we want a woman in the White House. Okay?
Wendy Davis, I think it was.
Right, that's right. That's exactly right.
But she doesn't have the level of experience that Hillary Rodham Clinton does.
Yeah, no, definitely not Wendy.
I mean, Hillary Clinton is foreign policy. First of all, she knows the inner workings of the White House, which saves months of education when you walk in that door. Two, she knows everybody in Washington and in the world, okay? She can pick up the phone and call anybody. Three, although many people in America may hate her, the vast majority of people throughout the world respect her and Bill. They get things done.
Listen,
done. Five, they're both brilliant. Six, she has experience as a first lady, a senator, a secretary of state. And let me tell you something, as somebody who has a vagina, my love, that is the woman who is destined to be the first president, a female of the United States of America. And I don't want to chance somebody else who doesn't have a strong a chance to win, because I'm tired of watching guys take that position.
Leslie, you're the most loyal Hillary voter I've ever met, and I respect you for it.
Well, I love her.
That's awesome. But my problem with that is that Bill Clinton, to a lot of liberals, was too centrist. This NAFTA thing that he did with Mexico and South America and so forth that sent so many jobs overseas. Granted, the economy was great, everything was wonderful, but we can't go that far back in the past to try to live those days. I just think that Clinton's time is done.
And I don't. Mark, what do you think?
I think that view that the Clinton's time is done is a large was the difference between Obama beating Hillary in 2008 in a very, very, very close primary election. I think there are people who feel like it's like when everyone says Jeb Bush. I don't care who he is or what he says. His name is Bush. His father and his brother were president. I don't think he has a chance, because I think people feel the Bush's time is done. I think there are a significant number of people who feel like Dave that the Clinton's time is done. That being said, God knows I will happily, happily pull the lever for Hillary Clinton if she's a Democratic nominee. I might even pull the lever in the primary for her, but I want to see who's running. I don't want to clear this election over.
And speaking of, you know, we're going to take a break when we come back. Dave, you want to stay with us and chat more? We'll check. Okay, we'll be back. Mark Levine is my co-host. When we come back, we'll talk about who he thinks would be the Democratic nominee. We always do this. We have like 7 or 8 topics to talk about, and we haven't even finished topic 2 because we've digressed and come up with a topic that's not on our agenda. Love it. Love it. Hope you love it too. Don't go away. There's Mike Bruno. Thank you, Joe. The Joe Beamer back with us. Left us for the BBMB in the sky and came back. Anyway, Mark Levine is my co-host in this and next hour. And Dave is actually joined. I actually am sandwiched between two men tonight. And we're talking about Chris Christie. And now we've gone off on who's going to be the Democratic nominee. Okay, so who do you think, who's going to run against Hillary, Dave and Mark? Who should go first?
Whomever you wish.
Okay, we'll go with Dave because D comes before M.
Okay.
Sounds fair.
Here's a bolt of lightning out of left field. Biden.
Well, Biden, yeah, I do think.
Obviously.
I hope he. I don't. Would he run against Hillary, though, Mark?
Yeah, I think he might. Sure.
Really? I thought they had a good relationship.
They do, but that doesn't matter. It's not perfect.
Yeah, I like Joe Biden, but.
I love Joe Biden. I've always loved Joe Biden.
I had a chance to talk to Joe Biden on an NPR, some other radio station, whatever. And it was
when you were cheating on us, yes.
That was the middle of the day.
Right,
when,
how dare you, Dave?
When Randy was on, but or would have been on. But it was about partitioning Iraq, you know, and I always thought that was a great idea, to split it down the middle. And, you know, the Shia get one side and the Sunni get
Sunni
the
get
other.
The other side.
I know. That was
And the Kurds would have their own.
And I thought it was
too.
A great idea.
I like the idea, too. It's a little more complicated than that because there's lots of areas where they're mixed. But, listen, I've also met Joe Biden in person, and he's a great guy. I have nothing negative to say about him, and we'll see if he runs.
Too,
but, I do think Hillary is more well-loved in the party than Joe Biden, even though I'm a huge Joe Biden fan.
Leslie?
I think I would definitely go for Hillary. I hope that Joe Biden doesn't run because he is that everyman's blue-collar working-class guy. But speaking of Marky Mark, didn't you have an encounter with Joe Biden briefly?
I did, actually.
No. Marky Mark Grimaldi.
Oh, excuse me.
Well, let's let Mark Levine go first.
Okay.
Well, my encounter with Biden was when he was running for president, and I was at a talk radio convention, and he spent about 30 minutes in, and of course, if you've ever gone to a talk radio convention, which Leslie has, you know that they're full of right-wing people because 95% of talk radio is right-wing. So he went in there, people asked a bunch of nasty questions, he spent 30 minutes in there and left. I caught him out in the hall and asked him about Iraq, which was the big issue at that time, and we talked for almost an hour. We talked for about twice as long as he did inside the meeting, and everyone was surrounding us, and I'll tell you, I like Joe Biden. He's a very, very likable guy. He's got that likability that Bill Clinton has, frankly, that I honestly don't think Hillary Clinton has. She doesn't have that, and Obama doesn't have it either. But Bill Clinton and Joe Biden have this thing where they're just very, very likable people. He's very earnest.
Yeah.
He really cares, and he is an everyman guy, and I'm a big fan of Joe Biden, and if Biden ran against Hillary, I'd have a tough choice.
All right. Well, Dave, thank you for joining us tonight. That's hour two. Hour three, Mark Levine will be my co-host and partner in crime again. Stick around. Here to set you free. How you doing? I'm Leslie Marshall. He's Mark Levine. I'm on the West Coast. He's on the East Coast. I'm in L.A. He's in D.C. He is a former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank in the House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committees. Currently hosting the Washington-based radio television talk show The Inside Scoop and the Ruckus Caucus on Pacifica Radio, WPFW 89.3 FM. Also on TV, you can see him on Fox, MSNBC, CNN, Fox Biz, and CNBC. He's tangled with everyone on the right from Bill O'Reilly to his Pacifica co-host on the left, and even me. He's guest hosting our show next Tuesday through Friday. It sits in here for me, and he is my co-host every Thursday, normally hour two, but tonight we're doubly blessed to have him hour two and three. Me, I'm Leslie Marshall, your host and co-host tonight with Mark. You can catch me on Fox News Channel as I'm under contract with them. Don't do any other television. This is the Leslie Marshall Show and the Inside Scoop edition of the show every Thursday with Mark. But our show is also heard on, you can get it on TuneIn on the Progressive Voices Radio Network. You can get it on the American Armed Forces Radio Network, on your radio, and on our stream at LeslieMarshallShow.com/stream. We stream live when we broadcast live Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. And in this hour, if you want to join Mark or I, you can tweet Mark at Mark Levine Talk. He'll share your tweets. Tweet me at Leslie Marshall. And that's how you follow us on Twitter. Also, you can call us 888-653-7543 is the number. All right, Mark, good evening and welcome. Welcome back. Thank you for being with us tonight and for being with me as my co-host. I appreciate it.
Actually, I have an announcement myself. You're on TuneIn Progressive Voices. I'm going to join you on TuneIn's Progressive Voices. I'm going to be on The Late Shift, midnight to 2 a.m. Eastern Time, but that's still 9 to 11 on the West Coast.
Is that on TuneIn or on the Progressive Voices Radio Network, the two separate things?
Oh, on the TuneIn Progressive Voices.
Oh, okay. Am I on TuneIn Progressive Voices?
You are.
Oh, okay.
And it's also, you do so much, Leslie. You don't know where you are.
I know. Well, believe me, when it comes to that stuff, I don't know. Well, there's a lot of things that we had on our agenda to talk about. We didn't get to all of them in last hour, but we are going to get to some in this hour. And it would seem right now, let's go overseas. At the end of last hour, one of our callers, Daily Dave in Hawaii, had briefly mentioned Iraq. So let's head back to Iraq. It seems that Iraq is struggling to tighten control of its border with Syria. And a lot of people are alarmed by this resurgence of the Al-Qaeda forces that definitely want to build an Islamic state in that area, it would seem. So let's talk about this. Let's break this down. How difficult is it for Iraq to hold on to and to control its border with Syria versus the forces of Al-Qaeda that are pushing back?
Impossible. Impossible. They can't do it. Frankly, we barely could do it, and really we couldn't, back when the United States was there. And the United States only was able to do it after we made peace with the Sunni minority. So Iraq is the mirror image of Syria. So Syria is a country that's vastly Sunni with a few Shia people in charge, and Assad is a Shia, and he's massacring all the Sunnis, and he gets support from Iran, Hezbollah, which are Shia groups. Iran is a majority Shia state with a minority Sunni population that lives on the border with Syria in Anbar province, which you may remember from our Marines who fought so hard to get Fallujah. The only reason we were able to pacify the Sunnis is what was called the Sunni Awakening. Really what it was a bunch of payoffs and bribes and support from the U.S. government to give the Sunni minority a role in Iraq. I actually think Biden's idea that David expressed is probably the best one, just simply partition it and be done. But at the end of the day, there is this vast war going on among the Arabs in the Middle East between the Shias, largely supported by Iran, Hezbollah, the Assad government in Syria, and Al-Qaeda, which is also is obviously a terrorist group, and they want to impose a vicious Islamic extremism. And the vast majority of the people want neither. They don't want Iranian theological extremism. They don't want Al-Qaeda theological extremism. They just want to live their own lives. They're Muslims, but they're not out to kill anybody. And they're getting squeezed, both in Iraq and in Syria. And in fact, the Al-Qaeda group calls itself the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria because they don't recognize a border at all. They basically want to control the entire Middle East. It's ugly, it's nasty, and there's no end coming anytime soon. It's very sad.
So basically, when we think that, you know, the three heads of Al-Qaeda were cut off and they're losing power, that's not true in certain sections of the world, in Iraq being one of them.
No, it really isn't. I mean, we awakened Al-Qaeda both in Iraq and Syria. There was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq or in Syria. There was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq.
But aren't there forces fighting Al-Qaeda now in Syria?
Yes.
I mean, no. Forces, I mean, there's been a split between Syrians that, in a sense, joined them because they thought they had the same agenda, and they don't.
And they don't. And indeed, in fact, the so-called rebels fighting Assad are two entirely groups of people, one of which, the Free Syrian Army, does believe in democracy. They're secular. They're not anti-Christian. And they're, frankly, the weakest of the three, even though they represent about 85% of the Syrian people. The strong forces in Syria are the Iranian-backed Assad regime, which has already massacred 100,000 people, and the new Al-Qaeda, which never used to be in Syria, but saw a vacuum of power and moved in. And the people are getting crushed in the middle. And it's horrible what's going on. And now you've got millions of refugees, practically a third of the country, in Jordan and Turkey, and Lebanon's being destabilized, just like Syria. There is a massive beginning Middle Eastern war between Shia and Sunni. The vast majority of people don't want to fight it, but they're being forced, almost against their will, to choose sides, and both sides are evil. Both sides are horrible. It's very sad. And Iraq was at least a stable dictatorship under Saddam Hussein. It's now.
Yeah, I have to say. I mean, there were horrific things that took place to the Kurdish community under Saddam Hussein. But there are many, and we had a show one night. I don't know, a couple of years ago, but there are many Iraqis who, you know, like it's that devil you know versus the devil you don't. Many Iraqis who said, well, you know, at least we had food on the shelves at the supermarket and our kids could, you know, go to school. There were schools and there, you know, the schools aren't there and we, you know, had jobs. And in other words, many people think things were better under Saddam Hussein than they are now.
I'll tell you something. You mentioned the Kurdish people. The Kurdish people are neither Shia nor Sunni. They're a third group of people.
Correct.
And they mostly are just defending their territory and are frankly the most peaceful pro-American people in the Middle East. I would support an independent Kurdistan. I don't know many people who would argue that other than I, but I try to be consistent here. And these are people who are not trying to occupy other people's countries, not trying to kill everybody. I really think, and that's, of course, the lands. They're in Syria and Iraq and Turkey and Iran. They haven't had a state for hundreds of years, but largely they're persecuted by everybody in this mix. It's awful.
What does that mean if, in fact, al-Qaeda takes control of a border, like you said, that we couldn't hold on to, that Iraq obviously is losing ground, and this does seem to be, unfortunately, a losing battle? What does that
What does that mean?
Does that mean we're in for more terrorist activity in that region and throughout the world because Al-Qaeda will gain steam? And when they have that, they will then get more funding from outside sources because they will be more relevant?
Yes. Now, they will not take over Iraq. Iraq is a majority Shia country. We're talking about Anbar province, which is the whole western part of Iraq. It looks big on a map, and it is big, but it's mostly desert. I mean, most of the people in Iraq live along the Fertile Crescent, the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. That's where the vast majority of the population is. You can think of Anbar province like we might think of, I don't know, Wyoming or Alaska or New Mexico, Arizona, you know, really big state of desert without that much people in it. Still, it's a large area, and if al-Qaeda is uncontrollable there, they can build a terrorist state there just like they could build one in Yemen or Afghanistan or Pakistan or Somalia or anywhere else, and it's going to be something that we're going to have to worry about for a long time to come, absolutely. But I want to be clear, the Iranian-backed terrorists, Hezbollah, are no more peaceful than al-Qaeda. They're just as dangerous. They're also terrorists. They also do car bombings of civilians. We've got two awful groups fighting each other, and unfortunately, the people are in between.
How does this occurrence with al-Qaeda affect the United States in its relationship with Iraq and in its relationship with that region on the whole? Because certainly al-Qaeda views us as an enemy.
Maliki is asking for us to basically come back. We're not going to send troops there, but to come back with arms and things like that. And I understand that, but Maliki, the prime minister of Iraq, he doesn't have clean hands either. All right, he's not as bad as al-Qaeda, but he's largely in league with Iran. You know, I've felt all along, and I've even brought some of them on the show, I've feel sympathy for the Free Syrian Army, who are just regular people. They're not Islamic extremists. They're Muslim, but they're not at all trying to impose a theology. They're in league with Christians. They have Shia and Sunni. These are the people that are just getting destroyed in what is becoming, basically, Syria and Iraq are becoming like Vietnam was in the Cold War. It's more than Syria and Iraq. Russia is trying all its weapons to support Iran. You've got Saudi Arabia basically fighting them with our support. So we support Saudi Arabia, which ends up supporting, frankly, al-Qaeda. And then Russia supports Iran, which ends up supporting Hezbollah and Assad. And like I said, ordinary people get crushed in the middle of this great power battle. I wouldn't be surprised if Syria basically empties out and all that's left is a massive battlefield while the real people of Syria are starving in refugee camps all around it. I argued 2 years ago on this very show that if we did a no-fly zone in Syria like we did in Libya, not that there'd be perfection in Syria, but we would prevent al-Qaeda from coming in. And now I fear just the worst. And I also think Americans don't want us to be in any war. I understand that after Bush in Iraq. So that's why they didn't support Obama when he talked about doing something in Syria. But in this case, I think inaction is very dangerous. I don't want to send troops there, but I also don't think we can ignore the problem.
No, we can't ignore the problem. What does al-Qaeda want? Do they want power? Because I'm not sure. I mean, I don't think al-Qaeda necessarily are as much about a perversion of Islam as the Taliban are.
I think they do want power. I think they, I mean, look at the name of their group, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. That's not a small request. They basically want their own state. And what's fascinating is that some of the rebels in Syria who should have known better, who were understandably, you know, Assad is killing them right and left, thought that by joining with al-Qaeda, they at least could fight Assad, who had, you know, massacred 100,000 civilians. They joined with al-Qaeda, and lo and behold, al-Qaeda started massacring the civilians too. And, you know, talk about the devil you know and the devil you don't know. They're both devilish. I do think al-Qaeda wants to control the Middle East. I think they're not the only ones who do. I think we do. Russia does. Iran does. But I think they're pretty nefarious. And I think the Taliban, remember, al-Qaeda is as much a movement as it is an organization. It's not necessarily Osama bin Laden top-down kind of thing. It's a movement, much like you might call communism or Nazism or people can join al-Qaeda without ever reporting to the people at the top. It's this idea of imposing Sharia law across the Middle East, and most Muslims don't want that. But those that do have the arms, and they're fighting pretty hard.
And this is dangerous. Okay, well, we're going to be switching gears when we come back after this segment with my co-host, Mark Levine, in Washington, D.C. This is the Inside Scoop edition of the Leslie Marshall Show. I am she, he is he. Don't go away. If you want to join us, give us a buzz, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Or you can follow us on Twitter and tweet us at Mark Levine Talk, at Leslie Marshall. That would be one for me, one for him. Anyway, we will be back. Don't go away.
Well, I see that in the news that some of the folks in West Virginia now have been cleared or given the thumbs up to drink water again. Except for pregnant women. Huh. Not sure why that is that officials think that one person can drink the water, but two is off limits. Must be something about the odds are that they'd be sued by both the mom and the kid. Now, in this day and age of living in sue-happy America, I'm surprised that someone hasn't come up with the theory, or the conspiracy theory, that bottled water industries in West Virginia might have started this. I mean, think about it. I mean, water per bottle is like 300% more expensive than gas and oil in 16-ounce bottles. So bottled water industry, well, they have a lot to gain here. And with West Virginians trusting Freedom Industries about as far as they can throw them, well, Freedom Industries, you know them. They're the folks that made this spill. Oh, but they weren't really aware of it until someone really started saying, gee, my face is itching. Note to Freedom Industries, the word freedom in your name does not mean that you have the freedom to make a mess and then not fix the problem. See, here's a real rub. You folks with gas and oil and fracking and whatever, if you really want to help us, don't just send good PR people. Actually fix the problems. And if you're the problem, fix it. Here's my plan for you, Freedom Industries. Start passing out bottled water to everybody, free of charge, whether they like it or not. Store it up. Never know if this will happen again. And then give them a divining rod so they can look for other water sources. Oh, and I have an inside tip to some clean water, by the way. If West Virginians want clean water, go to Pennsylvania. I'm Will Roberts, and this is your Weekly Telegram. And if you want to hear more of my take on the daily events, go to willsays.com.
And that is, as he just said, Will Roberts. He's a political comedian. Mark Levine is with us very quickly in 2 minutes or less. Mark, talk to us about this. We did discuss it earlier in the show. 300,000 people with contaminated water in West Virginia and then couldn't get water.
Here's the dirty little secret about West Virginia. This is nothing new. That's the dirty little secret. This has been going on for decades. Basically, they're doing mountain bombing. They're bombing the oldest mountain range on the planet, the Appalachian Mountains, and making moonscapes out of it and dripping arsenic and selenium and other chemicals. The Elk River, the river above Charleston, was actually the only clean river left in West Virginia, and then they polluted that too. And the reason the people can't vote them out is because the coal company owns the politicians in West Virginia because money is speed. speech. So, yes, this comes down to Citizens United as well. When the polluters control the state's people lack water.
Do you think that this is also easier to do in West Virginia in that area because of the income level of the people, which is very impoverished?
Sure.
Or indigent?
People are relatively uneducated. They're very poor. This is a one-industry state, largely, particularly in these areas. It's coal mining or nothing. It's kind of like the company town when you have to buy from the company store because you can't afford to go anywhere else. People who can afford to leave these places in West Virginia largely have. The coal industry controls it. They even sometimes control national politicians because even President Obama, even though he didn't win West Virginia, is afraid to offend the coal interests that are polluting everything. And as somebody who lives downstream from West Virginia, I don't like it either.
All right, Mark, thank you. Mark Levine, my co-host in this Inside Scoop edition of the Leslie Marshall Show. Tonight, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about another school shooting in New Mexico. We hope you'll join us. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. And we're back. Inside Scoop edition of the Leslie Marshall Show. My co-host, Mark Levine. Follow him at Mark Levine Talk. And follow me at Leslie Marshall to tweet us and to call us, 888-653-7543. And I think in this segment, you definitely want to get on board. In New Mexico, there was a shooting at a middle school, allegedly by a 12-year-old boy. Now, I think, you know, we cringe with Newtown children dead. And, Mark, I know that you cringe along with I every time, you know, we hear about this. I mean, first of all, do you think that we as Americans... I want to talk about desensitization, which is one that we as people are desensitized by the news because it happens so frequently to a degree, perhaps, or some of America is, a portion, a segment of it is. And then two, that children are also desensitized in the sense that desensitized by this level of violence or perhaps even desensitized or not even completely aware of how real this is. You know, I do know. I'm going to give you an example. My kids, who are 5 and 6, we moved some rooms around in our house because our kids wanted to have separate rooms, and we needed to do that, a boy and girl now at 5 and 6. And so mommy's office in the house got moved, and they came in, and they said, "Who's that?" And I said, "That's my daddy, Richard, your grandfather." And then my son said, "He's dead, right?" I said, "Yes." "Do you miss him?" I said, "Yes, very much. I think about him every day." And then he said, "And who's that?" I said, "That's Uncle Bob." And my daughter says, "You know, he's dead too." And because we try to be honest with our kids, but, you know, not, you know. And then my daughter said, why do you miss Richard? That's my father. And I said, well, and she goes, "Well, do you miss Nana?" That's my mother, okay, my father's wife. And I said, "Yes, but I can talk to Nana." And my son says, "Well, you can talk to Richard." I said, "No, I can't, honey. When you die, you never come back." And Ella's like, "Yes, you do." Do you know? And my daughter. So all I'm saying is that, and I know they're 5 and 6, but I think, I'm not blaming video games. I'm just saying that I don't think kids fully grasp that how permanent death is, the mass carnage. I mean, there's a difference between watching on the news a kid goes into a school and blows a bunch of people away, and then going in with that gun and blowing a bunch of people away.
Yeah.
You know, and let's talk about this. Interestingly enough, the family of this alleged shooter in New Mexico has spoken out, and that's not always the case. Obviously, in Newtown, not able to be the case because she was deceased. But there are so many concerns here. I mean, experts are concerned about how shootings are now occurring in middle schools. Mark, what's going on? We're watching the shootings and the shooters become younger and younger and younger. It was colleges, then high schools. Now it's middle schools. What's next?
Well, if we're not going to talk about the availability of guns, these things are going to happen, period. You know, I don't blame a 5 or a 7-year-old or even a 12-year-old for not understanding the permanency of death. That's something that's a very hard concept, frankly, for adults to really focus on. You hear adults all the time talk about talking to their deceased loved ones. It's it's very hard for humans to accept their mortality. But there's a big difference between that and having the weapons available to permanently take
Amen. Because in this case, the alleged shooter, 12 years of age, got the gun from his home.
Yep. And I'll tell you something. As horrific as those parents feel, I would throw them in jail as a lesson to everybody else. I'm sorry, if you allow your child
I agree with you 100%. Let me tell you something. Years ago, in the early 90s, when I was working locally in Buffalo, New York, there was a man named Michael, I can't remember his last name, and he founded an organization called GRIEF, Gun Responsibility in Every Family. The reason he founded it is because his gun was not responsibly locked away, and his son and friend were playing, and that friend shot his son, who was... very young, I think like 7 or 8, to death. He lost his son. So, and he's not against people owning a gun, even though he lost his son, although he got rid of all his guns. But the problem is responsibility. I mean, if you take a kid...
I'd require gun locks if you have a child in the home.
Absolutely. And I feel if a child's a minor and they commit the crime with your gun, you need to be held legally responsible as
Absolutely.
Well. I agree.
Absolutely. And it's sad because it's hard to press these parents who are already suffering so much. But my God, how do we impose upon the people who have guns, whose kids have not yet killed anyone? How do you let them know? I mean, if you had a nuclear bomb around the house, you'd probably be careful not to step on it. Well, a gun isn't a nuclear bomb, but it can kill a lot of people. You know, people somehow are more protective. I mean, they wear seatbelts in their cars, but they leave their guns lying around the house. I don't understand that mentality, but they're like, well, don't take away my guns. Well, you know what? Then you better be responsible with your guns.
And I agree with you. The other thing is some people say, well, my son or my daughter, I've told them, they know about guns, they know they're dangerous, I've taught them. There's a difference between a parent taking a 12-year-old out to go hunting or target shooting and having the weapon in plain view. But when your child may be going through something and resort to violence.
Not just in plain view. I wouldn't even hide it. You lock it. Absolutely. There are gun locks, and they're designed for that purpose. Actually, one of the best things I've seen is these new guns that require you to have your actual fingerprints. So you, the ones you saw in, I think it was the James Bond film, those are real things. And, you know, so that someone, frankly, that would protect you against some intruder stealing your gun and shooting you. I mean, it wouldn't protect, I mean, crazy people can get guns with the fingerprints, but if you're child should not have access, even if they're poking through the closet, because they could be looking for their Christmas presents. They find a gun, it's new, it's shiny, kids see play guns. What happens if you pull the trigger? It's so stupid that people are dying because of this. It's stupid, it's moronic, it's horrific.
It's unnecessary. Do you think that if parents were held accountable, this would be a deterrent, possibly, to a degree?
You know, I don't know. It wouldn't be at the beginning, but the publicity of it might be. If some guy with a gun who's got kids actually saw another parent who I'd feel bad for going to jail for 5 years because their kid killed someone with their gun, they might just get a lock. I actually would do it differently, but, you know, my proposals probably wouldn't get through Congress.
But this is gun owners.
To have a lock.
And I agree with you about the locks. I mean, we could go on and on. It is not just the guns. Obviously, without the gun, he couldn't do that amount of damage, we know. But it is not just the guns, though. We have a culture of violence. Our children are resorting to violence far too fast and easy. We cannot ignore that as a society, as the village it takes to raise that child. We have a culture of violence. We have guns. Then we have mental illness. We don't know if this 12-year-old had anything, was on medication or whatever. And honestly, then there is also... there's also a certain level of responsibility with parents. I mean, no child is born to, at 12 years of age, go into a school and blow his classmates away, allegedly. There's something that happened. Are we too busy? Are we not paying attention? Are we not, as the psychologist said, please hear what I'm not saying, are we ignoring our children's needs because we're working so damn hard to get another 60-inch television screen.
Leslie, when I was a teenager, I worked in a summer camp, and I was in charge of second-grade boys, which are boys about probably the age of your kids, 7, 8 years old, 6, 7, 8 years old. And let me tell you something. They were constantly fighting. Anyone who knows 6, 7, 8-year-old boys, they're fighting, they're crying.
Well, wait, it's interesting. Mark, you were right about that. It is interesting. There was a Harvard University study, and I don't remember the year, but I remember watching it on TV, and this is before I had kids, but it was just interesting. I was channel surfing, and I saw it, and I was like, hmm. And they had a bunch, they had boys, and they gave boys dolls, and then they gave girls tanks, little toys, okay? Mm-hmm. And except for like one or two boys, the boys ripped off the heads of the dolls,
right.
Fought with them, played war, and the girls were dressing up the tanks for the most part. You know, so there is something violent about all of you. Maybe Lysistrata shouldn't just be a funny idea in a book.
Here's my point. The boys would hit each other, and then they'd make up, they'd forget about it by the end of the day. Occasionally, one would even pick up a rock that was on, and then they could do real damage, and we'd expel them. But they didn't have access to guns. I think 6, 7, 8, 12, even 14-year-old boys will fight. I think that's part. If they fight with their fists, they're going to end up with some bloodied faces. If they fight with their guns, their friends are dead, and they may not even understand how permanent that is. It's the availability of guns that's the problem. We're never going to stop young boys from fighting. I'm sorry. It might be nice in a perfect world. That ain't going to happen. But we can restrict their availability to guns.
Okay. Let's take some calls. And we go to, let's see, next is Michael in the Bronx. Michael, good evening. Thank you for joining us. What's your take on another school shooting, this time in New Mexico, at a middle school, allegedly a 12-year-old, the shooter?
Am I correct to understand that one of the questions is, should we keep talking about this or just let it pass on as an everyday occurrence?
Yeah, you know, everything we posted and everything we're saying, you know, on air are all part of the conversation. There's no strict Q&A, but you know, feel free to respond to that.
I think Michael's talking about the question on Twitter was,
that's
has
what
this
I said.
Become
that's what
so...
I said.
No, I know, I'm just correcting what Michael had said.
Oh.
I think, Michael, the question was, has this become so commonplace that it's just another news story like the weather and, you know, anything else on the news?
I can't call it another news story, maybe another statistic. Maybe we should look at that. But under no circumstances should anybody stop talking about it. And the angle that, or I should say the direction I want to go with this is that I get so freaking sick and tired of hearing these conservatives talking about Benghazi and four dead Americans, this, four dead Americans, that. All right? I know we've had several conversations about Benghazi, but damn it, why the hell is it that these conservatives don't even want to look at the unnecessary loss of life, innocent life, right here in our own backyard, right here in our own nation, with the madness of gun violence? You want to talk about four dead Americans, why don't you talk about 40 times four Americans of various ages? Hello? You know, it's got to start here. And, you know, with these kids getting guns, quite frankly, this is what the NRA wanted. They wanted to keep saying, more guns, more guns. Everyone should have guns, no questions asked, man, woman, and child. What the hell is that sending a message to our, you know, kids? And then now you got a 12-year-old that is facing the legal system, and they don't even know or understand, A, the dynamics of the system, let alone, B, the consequences of their actions because they're raised wrong. Are you all aware that Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre, the guy that, oh, God, what was his name, Adam Lanza?
Adam Lanza.
Lanza, yeah. Do you realize that he was raised to hate and to hate with guns by his parents? Which goes to show you that, just as you said, the responsibility does lie with the parents, but I go further and say the responsibility also lies with the key figures that want to shoot their mouths off and want to instigate this kind of violence. And yes, I'm pointing my big index finger to the damn NRA and the right wingers that pollute the airways with their filth.
Okay. I don't know that there's much to add to that. Thank you, Michael. You know I agree with you. It's very simple. Guns are a dangerous weapon. It's silly that you have to say something like that. It is absolutely obvious. We require people to register their cars because cars can kill people, but cars are not made to kill people. Guns are. The fact that any old 12-year-old can have access to a gun, I mean, I'm fine with cops, I'm fine with military, I'm fine with people who are trained and pass a test and register the guns to go out hunting or self-protection in their own homes with locks, but it's way too easy to kill someone in America. No country in the world, no civilized nation in the world is like this except us. It's very sad.
Yeah, most definitely. We'll take a break. We'll be back right after this. Mark Levine's my co-host on the Inside Scoop edition of the Leslie Marshall Show tonight on this Thursday. Don't go away. And we're back. Leslie Marshall here on the West Coast. Mark Levine there on the East. We are co-hosting the Inside Scoop of the Leslie Marshall Show, the Inside Scoop edition of the program. Mark, let's get to calls, and we go to Reggie in Decatur, Georgia. Reggie, what do you have to say about these school shootings? And he's on line five.
Yeah, like Mark said, every household with a gun, and with kids, you require gun locks. And you have all of these, as I said before, and I'll say it again, you have all of these radical right-wing conservative radio and TV talk show hosts always clamoring about the Second Amendment and that the government's going to take away your guns and your right to defend yourself and your right to bear arms and all of that. You never read the first four words of the Second Amendment, a rail-regulated militia.
Right.
Yep.
How can we get it inside his thick-headed ass skulls, those first four words, and that the government is not trying to take away your right to bear arms or your weapons, the legal ones, not the AR-15 assault rifles and all that stuff. How do we get it through their thick-headed ass skulls that the government is not trying to take away your right to defend yourself, your family, your personal private property, or anything else that you hold so dear to you, so close and dear to your heart, you know? And they always clamoring about the Second Amendment. If they ever bother to read the whole entire thing, they'll understand exactly what it fully and officially means, right?
Mark?
Yeah, Reggie, there's two issues. The first, how do we convince people they're not trying to take away their guns? I actually did a whole show. You can look on my website, marklevinetalk.com. It was when I was subbing for Leslie, because I don't know whether people thought I was the conservative host Mark Levin or what, but somebody was spreading a crazy conspiracy theory that they were confiscating guns in a 500-mile radius around Galveston, Texas, which basically includes like six states and parts of Mexico. And people were actually believing this complete nonsense, BS, words I can't say on the radio. And I just think people believe in desperate nonsense. As far as the Second Amendment, we need really just one more Supreme Court justice. If Obama gets to appoint someone to replace one of the conservatives, this will go away. This nonsense that you ignore the first part of the Second Amendment is new. The Supreme Court did rule it back about 5 years ago, but the 200 years prior to that, they obeyed all of the Second Amendment. So that's a legal question, and really the only way to change that is to change the Supreme Court.
Let's go next to Carol in Wisconsin. Carol, good evening. Question or comment regarding these school shootings, most recently New Mexico?
Yes, thank you. I agree with all your points on guns. It breaks my heart. I just wanted another take. As they say, it does take a village. Parents need to be more involved in their kids' lives. For example, you can call me old-fashioned, but when I was in grade school in the 70s, all of us walked to our neighborhood schools, and most of us had one parent at home. Therefore, we went to and from school, and all the neighbors knew us, and someone was always keeping an eye on us. And so if there was trouble, like a fight or bullying, it would get back to the parents, because the neighbor would tell the parents, and they could nip the trouble in the bud. And so we had a lot more supervision, and I think we kind of got away from that.
It makes sense to me. And, again, my point is, yeah, boys will get into fights, but they don't have to have access to guns.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, Carol, thank you very much. Mark, I want to ask you one last question. A lot of people are tweeting things like bring prayer back, it's morality. When we had prayer in the school, did we not have these school shootings? I mean, believe me, I'm not big on I'm big into separation of church and state. But why do you think we have more of this now? Is it because we have more guns? Is it because we have more violence our children are exposed to? Is it because we have more people? What do you think?
I think we do have more guns. I think we have easier access to guns than we used to. I think guns kill better than they used to. You know, you get out a big old shotgun, and it's a big thing, and you can't conceal it, and it has two shots if it's a double-barreled shotgun. It's not one of these, you know, 100-bullet drum things like the Colorado shooter had. It's easier to kill people, and kids have easier access to guns. I'm sorry.
And easily influenced, because you see one school shooting, then somebody else gets that idea. In their mind.
That's
yeah.
True.
People
are always going to be dangerous. It's the guns.
Thank you, Mark. Mark, you know, I love you. Have a great rest of the night.
Mark love you Levine, too, Leslie.
Mark Levine, my co-host here on the Inside Scoop edition every Thursday of the Leslie Marshall Show. Keep in mind, folks, 12 years of age, most kids at 12 still believe in Santa Claus. Talk about not being able to grasp reality with guns, violence, and how much damage it can do. Think on that. Well, have a great night. We'll be back tomorrow. Hope you will too.